Ladies and gentlemen, this is the 12th and final round.
Right hand, Golovkin steps in and down he goes again. Unbelievable. Mayweather makes him pay. What a rookie mistake. A sensational left hook by De La Hoya.
It's facts. I'm the best. You know what I mean? Sometimes I don't want to believe it myself, but it's the truth. I'm the best.
I'm going to show you how great I am.
From Southern California, this is the Last Round Podcast.
Episode 118 of the Last Round Podcast. Thank you again for listening to us, whether you're on Spotify, Apple Podcasts, Stitcher, Boxing Socials, YouTube, wherever you're at, however you're listening. We appreciate it. Coming off of a pretty busy weekend of fights, especially here in the United States, even across the pond. You know, that whole Josh Kelly thing, that was a big surprise. I know that was a big surprise after that happened, because that happened earlier in the day this past Saturday. But, you know, what'd you think from a general standpoint, Mike? What'd you think of the fights this past weekend?
I thought it was good. I thought, you know, we were kind of seeing some good matchmaking, you know, some like 50-50 fights. The Mexicans are coming over and just blowing out the Brits. So it's not too good for me, I guess.
I know, man. I feel like this is deja vu in these conversations. You know, the British fighters get to a certain level and then they fight the Mexican fighters, which are, you know, my countrymen, and then you guys just can't get it done, man. Eventually, you'll get a win, though. I have faith.
I'm outnumbered, so I'm keeping my mouth closed.
But we have a very special guest this week here on the Last Round. He's actually a part of Oscar Valdez's team, who actually had, I would arguably say, the most significant win of his career up until this point, this past Saturday in Las Vegas at the Bubble. Frankie Espinoza of the Espinoza Boxing Management Team, who manages not only Oscar Valdez, but Joette Gonzalez, who's with Golden Boy, Raul Curiel, Joselito Velasquez, just to name a few. Frankie Espinoza Jr. is on the episode this week. Thank you very much for joining us, man.
No, thank you so much for having me on. I appreciate that.
Yeah, no problem. No problem. So we appreciate it, man. I mean, like we had messaged you, I think, I don't know if it was earlier today or yesterday, but we were just like ready to just do the episode ourselves. You know, we've done it before. And then you got back to us like right at the 11th hour, like, hey, man, I'm available if you guys need me. I was like, oh, sweet. So we definitely appreciate you catching the message right at the end right there, man.
Yeah, no, absolutely. Sorry I didn't, I didn't respond any sooner, but yeah, it's kind of flooded right now.
Yeah, no problem, man. We know you guys are definitely busy, especially after this past Saturday. Like I mentioned, from the Bubble, at the MGM Grand Garden Arena in Las Vegas on ESPN. Oscar Valdez remains undefeated and gets the 10th round knockout over now former world champ at 130 pounds, Miguel Burchelt. And Valdez is now the WBC super featherweight world champion. You know, I think you could just, like we talked about just before we came on air, we were about to dive into it, and then I said, oh, let's hold that for the air. Would you agree that this is the most significant win of Oscar's career at up until this point?
Oh, yeah, absolutely. There's no doubt about it. Yeah, 100%. Miguel Burchelt was the guy to beat in that division. I think he had like about 6 title defenses. He was probably considered the best or the most accomplished fighter in that division. So no doubt this is Oscar Valdez's biggest win.
What do you guys think about, because they were reporting on the night, I know yes, the ESPN commentators like Andre Ward and the others were reporting that obviously Burchell was a bigger man, you know, in the general aspect. And I think he outweighed Oscar by maybe 6 or 7 pounds. I think they said he weighed 146, 147-ish around there on fight night. Did you guys prepare for something like that going into this fight? Did you guys, I mean, spar bigger guys, because Burchell technically was coming in as a bigger guy?
Yes. Yeah, we definitely had, we expected him to be heavier or bigger. We did spar with heavier sparring partners to help prepare for that. But that was probably one of the things that Oscar Valdez did. And also I would say that he started lifting weights, believe it or not. I mean, he's never really lifted weights, until up to now. And, you know, he was kind of afraid of doing it, mainly because he didn't want to lose his speed. But I felt that once he kind of started, you know, accepting or adopting, diving into it and seeing, okay, I'm not losing my speed, but I'm feeling stronger, you can see how confident he was feeling in the training camp. And it kind of showed, to be honest, in the sparring.
Now, was that mostly Oscar's, request to lift weights, or was that a combination of him and maybe Eddie Reynoso and the whole team there to really push him to lift some weights?
Yeah, Eddie Reynoso encouraged him to start lifting weights. Nothing too heavy, nothing crazy. There's a gentleman, I forgot his name right now. I'm sorry, my mind's a little.
It's all right.
But as far as he helps out Canelo, he's like he helps out Canelo's strength and conditioning coach, and he also helps Oscar. So yeah, so I mean, I think obviously Eddie encouraged him to do it, and also encouraged him to let him know that speed, he wouldn't lose any speed in the process of doing that as well.
Frank, do you think that that performance kind of shows some of the stuff that he's learned under Eddie?
Oh yeah, 100%. I think obviously Oscar received criticism in the previous fights because we did switching trainers. But I think that says a lot about Eddie Reynoso, because the genius behind it, because honestly, we always knew that Burchelt was the route that we were going to go. And even though Oscar Valdez, he wasn't trying to change his style. What he did want to do was to, improve it, add more wrinkles to it, improve his defense, his footwork, clinching, just to be just a more of a complete fighter. And there was times in the past previous fights, and now if you kind of were to look at the Burchell fight, but they can go back in the last couple of fights, he was already actually working on things, for Burchell, just trying to perfect it. Obviously at that time, he wasn't perfecting it, but that was kind of like an Eddie saw that opportunity to practice what we're going to do once that big fight came. And, so when the Burchell fight came, he was more than ready.
Are you able to give us an insight to some of the genius behind Eddie Reynoso?
Oh yeah, absolutely. I mean, as far as the game plan, is that what you're talking about?
Yeah, just some of the stuff that he does maybe differently to other coaches.
Eddie Reynoso, I gotta commend him, because I've known him since we actually went up against him in 2002. We had Israel Vasquez at the time, and he had Oscar Larios. We lost to him, it was a title eliminator. And then we actually fought again against each other with Israel Vasquez and Larios in 2005, and Israel Vasquez beat him. So we've known each other for a very long time. So I think it's full circle that now that we're working together instead of, winning a championship together. But as far as Eddie Reynoso, he's obviously got the biggest name, Canelo. He doesn't need a box, or he doesn't need to train other fighters, I should say. But it commends him because he truly loves the sport. And that's just a lot about him, that he wants to be known as one of the best trainers. And he obviously has a true passion. He's not just, riding on Canelo. He wants to make a name for himself. And I think what he does, you'd be impressed what type of library that he has. He could tell you about old-time fighters that he reviews on his free time. So he really studies. He's a student of the game. But as far as helping Oscar Valdez specifically, he's really kind of took him back to the basics. And I think even though at times for Oscar, it was kind of like, what am I doing? I'm a former world champion. I'm a world champion. But at the end of the day, Oscar, I think now understands it. He kind of was weeding off those negative bad habits that he had. Some of it for Oscar was he was kind of going a little too wild. Sometimes he would throw a punch. He would be in a bad position and, open for a counter. So he essentially took him back to the basics. And then from there, just really kept doing it over and over. And that's one thing he told Oscar. He says, I'm not going to do those fancy work, that you see other trainers do. He says, because at the end of the day, you could throw 10 combinations, but let's be realistic. When does any fighter really do that? He says, I'm going to give you like, you know, 4 to 5 combinations, but these are combinations we're going to work over and over, but you're actually going to use it. And it's going to make a big difference. And I think that, so he's more practical and he's very smart. And I can't speak, you know, obviously I speak very highly of him.
Frankie, when the decision was being made to find a new trainer for Oscar, obviously you guys were associated with Manny Robles for quite some time. Was Reynoso always the first choice, or did you guys narrow it down? I'm assuming maybe you guys talked about it as a team and looked at the landscape of trainers who would fit best. Was Reynoso always the first choice, or did you guys narrow it down to maybe one or two or possibly three trainers for Oscar?
There was definitely at least like three trainers that we came across. But as you probably guys know, or, you know, it's not just, you can have the best trainer in the world. It doesn't matter. You know, it could be any top trainer you want to name. End of the day, they got to mesh well. They got to have chemistry. So that was an important part of the decision. I know that we received a lot of criticism, you know, for making a change at that time. But, you know, looking back, I think people understand why we did it, because if you kind of go back into those fights, Oscar was, in my opinion, he was getting to making fights more difficult than they should have been. You know, he was kind of going into, I mean, he's got a tremendous heart, tremendous balls. Everyone knows that. But at the end of the day, we know from experience that that's a short-lived career. And at the end of the day, Oscar Valdez's health is going to, you know, be in jeopardy because of that. And obviously the Scott Quigg fight was a final straw. And we had to really, you know, make a tough decision, because at the end of the day, hey, we won, we're undefeated. It was a critical time in his career to make that type of decision. But we needed somebody that was going to teach Oscar be a teacher, not just a coach, not just, you know, work on the mitts or stuff like that. Actually, someone's going to sit down, teach him the importance. And there was obviously top trainers that we were considering. We actually asked Eddie Reynoso, and believe, you know, at that time, if you remember, he was only working with Canelo. Hmm. So my father, Frank Sr., has a great relationship with him. We reach out to him and he was open to the idea. And I think between my father, Oscar Valdez Sr., Oscar, we all made a decision. And thank God that we did, because, I mean, now we're in a great position because of that. But it didn't happen overnight, but it was well worth it.
Going back to the Burchell fight, you know, the first 6 rounds, I think a lot of people, I know that some of the people that I was watching it with thought that it could have been over within the first 6 rounds. You know, Oscar was getting some pretty big shots in and stuff like that. And at times it looked like Burchell was about to go down. I think he did go down. Like, it hit the rope. So, you know, the rope saved him. But what did Oscar, or in his corner, think that he could finish it within this first 6 rounds? Because obviously it was very, I don't want to call it surprising, because Burchell is obviously a great fighter, but, you know, after getting hit with the shots that Burchell was hit by, especially in the first 6 rounds, Burchell seemed to find like a second wind after the 5th or 6th round. And I know that some of the ESPN commentators here in the United States were labeling him like I don't know if they call him like the Terminator or something, that he just kept coming. Was there at any point where Valdez or maybe Eddie or you guys maybe talking amongst yourself were just like, man, like, how did this guy, how is he still coming after the shots that Oscar's given him? Was there any of those discussions during that time?
No, I mean, we were mentally prepared for this fight. All of us, we expected the best for Chell. Be honest with you, I think that we expected that type of we were expecting that type of performance from him. And we knew that how much this fight meant to him. You know, both of them live in the same hometown in Mexico. So there's kind of a little bit of a hometown bragging rights. So we knew that he was going to come, and he wasn't just going to, you know, lay down. And, to all respect to him, he's a very well accomplished champion. You know, he has 6 title defenses, the most accomplished fighter in that weight class at 130 pounds. And at the end of the day, he's a big puncher. One punch could change change it. So we never felt, you know, comfortable in a sense. We knew that we had to stick to the game plan and to the fight, and to the referee says it was over, it was over. But it was so important for Oscar to remain focused and, you know, fight that. But you got to commend Eddie Reynoso, because I think it was in the 6th, 7th round. I don't remember, you know, Burchell was coming on, but Oscar, but he kind of, you know, snapped into Oscar's, you know, and hey, you know, you're in good condition. You know what? You want to win a world title? Yes. All right, let's go. All right. And let's do, start doing this again. Get back to using your jab, start moving your angles, you know, stuff like that. And it really kind of just, I think it was in the 8th round. You can see right away, he came out like, back, I'm back. Like, you know, this, we're back to the game plan. So, yeah, it was a great win.
Frankie, obviously it was a, you know, great fight for us fans to watch. I was wondering straight after, is there a rematch clause, and is there a chance we could see, you know, the fight again, or maybe even a trilogy?
Yeah, I mean, there was no rematch clause. He was the mandatory. So when there's a mandatory, there's no rematch clause. But as far as a rematch, I think we would be open to do that. I will say that it didn't, it was kind of more of a dominating performance that didn't, you know, I think that Burchell would need to kind of, you know, get a big significant win to kind of, you know, be back in the talks of it. But if he were to do that, I know that we would be open to it. But right now we're looking to, you know, bigger and better things.
So, you know, obviously I thought like he got, Oscar got that 10th round knockout. I believe it was like a sweeping left hook. He came up, pretty much came from under him and then got him at the top. And right before that, he pretty much, like, I think he pretty much showed the head movement, the defense that, you know, Eddie Reynoso is obviously known for with Canelo and stuff like that. Cause he dodged, I think it was like 2 or 3 shots that Burchell threw at him. And then came over the top with that left. You know, was that something that you guys, obviously, you know, he trains on defense with somebody like Eddie Reynoso, but after the fight, when you guys were able to kind of get away from all the noise, all the crowd, maybe have dinner or just be somewhere and just the team and stuff like that, did you guys dissect those final moments like that with that head movement that set up that shot? Because that was a pretty awesome, pretty awesome presentation at that moment, and how, and especially how he finished the fight.
Yeah, it was, you know, I mean, you got to, like I said, you got to commend Eddie Reynoso. He had him well prepared. Those, if you look at some of the footage as far as him, Oscar training, you know, he was, you know, with the little noodles that they, that Eddie uses, he was doing that. Like, he was already ducking. He does it with Canelo all the time, but he was done and opening up for the counter. So it was kind of something, as Oscar seen it so many times in the gym, that it was actually a natural type of reflex. So he dodged and just immediately saw the counter, but it was more of a reflex thing, which is, like I said, didn't happen overnight. It was, you know, it took, you know, a few camps to, you know, put everything together. But it was a perfect shot. I know that, you know, Oscar said, once I hit him, I knew at that exact moment the fight was over. I knew he wasn't going to get up. Like, it was just a perfect shot. And we also knew that he would get frustrated with Oscar after a while, after missing so much, that he would kind of get desperate and leave himself wide open. So we were expecting that, if that makes sense, which is, like I said, you got to commend Eddie Reynoso.
What was your react? Oh, go ahead, Mike. Go ahead.
I was just going to say, how did you guys celebrate afterwards?
Yeah.
Well, unfortunately, you know, you're stuck in a bubble. So, it's, you know, yeah. So unfortunately, you know, it wasn't the celebration probably that we wanted, but we still made the best out of it. I mean, it was a moment. At the end of the day, we made history. We felt that it's a moment that no one can take. And I mean, seeing myself, seeing Oscar, I've been there from day one, and seeing in his ups and his downs, as far as having a broken jaw, seeing people criticize him, seeing all this, and for him to have a career win in the most dominating fashion in his most important fight, you know, you can't be so happy for the kid, because he's earned it. He was disciplined. He was patient. He trusts the process. It all came together, And I'm proud of him. I'm proud to be able to say, I'm part of Team Valdez, and it's always an honor to go to war with him.
Was it like just a little bit sweeter because a lot of people had picked against him?
Oh, it was a lot sweeter. I'll tell you that. It was a lot sweeter. And be honest with you, we talked about it during the week. You know, we talked about it. We even mentioned like, hey man, once we win this fight, it's going to feel so much sweeter. And we even talked about it. We envisioned everything as far as like doing all this, like, you know, putting the hushing. It was talked about. I mean, it was literally vision. We visioned it, you know, to the T, and it was something, so it's a real moment to be in it, but 100% it does make it a lot sweeter. And I'm happy that Oscar is getting the respect that he deserves because he wanted nobody else but Burchell for the last 2 years. He said, he's the top guy. I want him because at the end of the day, people will respect me at the end of the day. So he went for it.
Now he's a two-time, obviously two-weight world champion. Next time he signs a management contract, are you going to have to wrap him in cotton wool and keep him away from those crocodiles and alligators?
You know what? I've been trying to do that from day one. in the nicest way, I'd say, hey, you know, you're a boxer, you know, use your hands. Maybe you shouldn't be petting him, or, he calls him Steve. The alligator's name is Steve. And I was like, why don't you just leave Steve in the cage or something? And at the end of the day, Oscar's going to be Oscar. And, you know, he's obviously everyone knows now he's a big time animal lover. Mm. And we used to joke around. I said, hey, man, when you're successful, you're going to build your own zoo. I would say that just kidding. and it turns out he literally almost has a zoo. I mean, it's like surreal. You know, I mean, I wouldn't touch the alligator for anything, but but I mean, he's happy. You know, he's happy and he's earning it. But 100%. If I could tape up Steve's mouth or something, I would do it myself. But I'm not going to touch it.
Of course,
like you get like NFL players, and you can't ride a motorbike, you can't go skiing and stuff like that. Like the next contract. Yeah. No more alligators, no more crocodiles.
Yeah, I gotta say that. I gotta. Yeah, that's a good idea, actually. You gotta add it in there, man. I gotta add that in there.
obviously, I would. I think it's safe to say that this was the most satisfied win of Oscar's career. At least, like I said, up until this point, you could just see the emotion on his face. You know how he jumped into Eddie's arms after he knew he ran around the ring like twice, and then he jumped into Eddie's arms and stuff like that. Before this fight, when was the last time that Oscar felt emotional like that after a win?
He's had a few moments where he showed wins like that. I remember just on top of my head, I definitely remember with Chris Avilos, and there was other wins, I think, with Miguel Mariaga. But 100%, like you said, this was like on a different level, a different platform. This was a career-defining fight for him. He knew what was at stake. And for him to perform the way that he did, and you got to, you know, like I said, you gotta think from his perspective. I mean, coming back from a broken jaw, losing a year, you know, out of his career right there, just kind of losing a year, working his way back, a new trainer, just the thing that, you know, he had to climb his way back up to the top, you know, even last, you know, but he had to climb his way back. And for some reason, people were doubting him, literally. I mean, it's okay to doubt him, but they gave him no shot. It was like no respect. And so he was certainly motivated by that. And I think for him, I think it was it hits you all at once. You know what I'm saying? Because he dreamt of having the WBC belt, everything that he's gone through. And it was just a raw emotion that he's been holding in, and he was finally able to just let it out. And I think it was, you know, I was excited, happy for him to see that, you know, see him do that.
Frankie, Top Rank posted Oscar Valdez silenced the doubters. Who's the next challenge for him to conquer? And I think it's from the official Oscar Valdez count. Replied Francisco Bandido Vargas. Is that a fight you've actually spoken about, or?
No. That was actually from Oscar. If you notice, the cartoon character, he was implying that it looks like Francisco Mendido Vargas. More than him. yeah, so he wasn't saying that he's the next opponent. He was saying, is that looks more like Francisco Vargas. Yeah, so that's what he meant. I think some people took it the wrong way.
Right, okay.
In terms of, obviously, you know, we keep repeating that he's obviously trained with Eddie Reynoso now, a few fights in with him and stuff like that. And he has somebody, like you mentioned, Canelo at that time, before Oscar linked up with Eddie. Canelo was the only fighter that Eddie had. You know, now he has Oscar, obviously Canelo, Ryan, Andy Ruiz, former heavyweight champions. I was also there. For somebody like having somebody like Canelo there for Oscar, who is obviously, you know, I think at this point it's easy to say that the guy is the pound for pound best in the world right now. You know, with that type of guidance, and, you know, because they're not really like that, they're close in age, Oscar and Canelo. You know, it's not like Ryan and Canelo or Ryan and Oscar, you know, a little bit, there's a bigger difference in age there. You know, what are some things in terms of, you know, that he learned? Not just, obviously, he learned a lot of stuff from Eddie, but from Canelo, being around Canelo, because, you know, it's not, they, like you said, up until that point, their camp was very private. They didn't let anybody in. Right. It was just them. You know, if you can remember back until going back to that initial meeting or that initial training camp, what's the one thing where Oscar said about, like, Canelo, where he's just like, yeah, man, like, this is what he said, or he was just like, this is what he was telling me. Like, the one thing that really stuck out in your mind from Oscar in regards to Canelo?
Well, there was definitely a few things. You know, one thing about Canelo, I think he's, for him being where he's at in his career, the much success that he has, he doesn't need to, you know, offer, you know, his opinion or give his advice to anybody, you know, and that says a lot about him as a person. He truly has been more than welcoming to us and to Oscar. To the point where, you know, like I said, he's, for example, I'll give you, you know, a couple examples. You want me giving it, be more specific, is there was one time Oscar, or a few times that Oscar would spar. And during when the break would happen, he would actually, you know, give it advice to Oscar. And then he's like, well, no, let me show you. So he would actually get into the ring and he would tell, okay, you sit here. All right, this is what I mean. And he would explain it, you know, and to be even more detailed, this was crazy, was that he was telling him at one point, he says, hey, listen, you can hit your opponent right here on the arm. Even if they have their hands up, you just keep hitting them in the arm. And eventually it's gonna drop. And keep in mind, this was right before he fought, Callum Smith.
Right.
And if you notice, the arm. So it was like, it was pretty surreal because, like, for Oscar, it was like, I remember him telling about it, but he actually did it in the fight. And that wasn't by accident. That was like something that Canelo intentionally did. We knew, you know, when his bicep was like, you know, I don't know what it was. It was pretty messed up. But
right.
But it was because Canelo was targeting it over and over. And I think, you know, there's like little things like that, you know, obviously. But like I said, there's been more than a few times that Canelo has jumped in the ring and giving him an advice and explaining to him, like, hey, if you're in this position, you do this. If you're in this position, you clinch. If you're in this position, you know, you move here. If you're in that, you know, so he's always not afraid to share advice. And that says, like I said, this is a lot about him, because, you know, he don't need to help us. He don't need help Ryan. He doesn't need help Andy. He doesn't need help Oscar. Like, you know, he's successful in his own way, but for him to welcome all of us and try to help, you know, he's part of, you know, we're part of the family in that sense, and he makes us feel that way. And I think Oscar and all the guys at the gym really appreciate that, because they look up to him.
Was there anything, you know, as after the fight, obviously when he got the win, was there anything that surprised him about Burchell during that fight up until that 10th round knockout? You know, that he said, like, yeah, you know what, like, he caught me with this shot, or he was doing this. Like, obviously Oscar was the faster fighter. I think everybody could agree with that.
Right.
But was there anything that after the fight he told you or told your camp, like, yeah, you know what? Like, I didn't expect him to do this, or he caught me with this and it was pretty good. Like, but I was able to, like, weather the storm. Was there anything right. like that?
Oh yeah. Yeah, absolutely. We talked to him and we asked him, you know, hey, you know, how was his power? And he says, honestly, Just, he's a strong fighter. He caught me with a good body shot at one point. I knew like, okay, I better like, you know, get back to the game plan. But he did also say he felt that when Oscar turned southpaw, he says, I knew that really confused him. I could see it in his face. He's like, I knew that really threw him off. And he was like, he was so confused on what I was doing or, you know, and he was actually kind of surprised how confused he was. He's like, he knew it was working, and eventually it set him up, and it made Berchelt be hesitant, you know, to make, you know, throw a punch or make a move. He was kind of like, what the hell are you doing? Yeah, I've never seen you fight southpaw. But he's like, I saw right away how confused he was.
Whose idea was that to turn southpaw? Because I know I was surprised, you know, because obviously Oscar has never done that before. He's never been known to do that. But so it kind of threw a wrench into like Burchell's game plan, because you could see he was, you know, essentially surprised on like, what is this guy doing? Was that something, was that like Eddie's idea, or was that like a combination? And was Oscar like comfortable initially to do that?
Well, I've seen Oscar do it in the gym for many years now, you know, long before Eddie Reynoso. But he's never felt confident to do it in the actual fight. I would say that Eddie Reynoso and him worked on this, and they did say, this is the time, we're going to switch southpaw. And when I do, so there was times that, so in sparring, he would fight southpaw the whole rounds, or, you know what I'm saying? Just to prepare for that. But that was something that Eddie planned, because he wanted to throw everything at Burchell to confuse him. And, so he told Oscar, we're going to do it. When I do it, you know, let's go, you know, so let's go, you know. So when it was time, they pulled it out, and Oscar felt comfortable to do it. He was feeling good, and it worked out. And like I said, Oscar was even surprised to see, like, he knew how he was like, man, he was so confused. Like, I knew I had him at that point.
At any point before the knockout in the 10th round, Frankie, was there like any, I don't want to label it concern, but was there any doubt in your mind, like, okay, this is probably going to go 12 rounds, but I think Oscar is ahead on the cards? Was there that any point did that cross your mind or your dad's mind or anybody in your team who you were around at that moment?
You know, honestly, we were such in a zone. We were and this is one thing we all accepted. We were taking it one round by round. And as simple as that sounds, that's the truth. So that's, Oscar was so locked in. But we, you know, comfortable in a sense, because Burchell was such a big puncher. We felt that one punch could switch it. So we were just pretty much, you know, sticking to the game plan until essentially the referee said the fight was over. Obviously, I felt that he could knock him out. Not in that fashion. You know, I was even myself, I was like, whoa, like it was a surprising way. But I honestly felt that, you know, he could be stopped. But essentially, I think Oscar Valdez's footwork was such an important thing, because we knew that Burchell had terrible footwork, and we knew that he couldn't touch Oscar, you know, and we knew that footwork. So that's why Oscar put in the work. We prepared for that. And honestly, I think that's kind of why, I mean, it made it look easy, but it wasn't easy, but it made it look easy. But a lot of it was because of the footwork. You know, we felt that anytime if he was in trouble, we knew the footwork was going to get us out of trouble. But we also knew that it was going to help us find openings.
Frankie, a lot of the belts are tied up actually in top rank. You know, Jamal Herring, Carl Frampton, winner of that. Who's the other one? Who am I thinking of?
Gervonta Davis has one, but he's not top rank, obviously.
So is Shakur Stevenson. So are they the next kind of opponents in mind, try to unify the division?
100%. That's our, you know, obviously we're, well, first I should say we're still celebrating. So we haven't quite talked about it yet, but 100%, Oscar wants unified titles. That's something that he wasn't able to accomplish, or, you know, have an opportunity to do at a featherweight. We were hoping to get Warrington, and I don't know what happened. I mean, I think it was more on Warrington's side, but it just didn't happen. And it was such a disappointment for Oscar, because that is a big goal for him, is to unify. So 100%, I feel like there's no doubt in his mind if he's, you know, thinking what's next, is definitely to unify.
So like Mike mentioned, you know, a couple of those names, obviously Shakur Stevenson is under the Top Rank banner. And there was some noise made after the fight in regards to him and, you know, kind of saying some stuff, I think, on social media and stuff like that. Obviously, you know, being in the boxing game with your team and your dad being in the boxing game for so long, it's a lot easier to make fights when you're under the same umbrella, you know. I don't think anybody's surprised by that notion. In regards to Top Rank, are they, I know you guys are still celebrating, so, you know, they're going to give you some time to, celebrate and then kind of go back to the drawing board maybe in a couple months or maybe a couple weeks or what have you. Is that something that Top Rank in their own respect has proposed in the fight, even before the Burchelt fight? Like, okay, the winner, we kind of want him to face Shakur, you know?
No, they didn't. They didn't say that at all. You know, I think obviously they, you know, they knew that it was, we can't focus on the next step. You know, we knew that it was a tough fight ahead of us. So they didn't mention it. As far as Shakur Stevenson, he's a great fighter. I think that he has a bright future. I think that him and Oscar Valdez are gonna fight, you know, at some point soon. Personally, me, I feel that it would be better if he won a world title, and it's like I said, in Unify, where it makes sense, because at the end of the day, I know Shakur Stevenson wants to fight, but you know, you can't have everything handed to him. You know, Oscar just waited, I think, almost 2 years for Burchelt. You know what I'm saying? So, you know, like I said, it's all respect out of him. I think he's a great fighter. I have no doubt that he'll be world champion. And that's why I do feel that him and Oscar Valdez is inevitable.
So Burchelt was obviously a big target for you guys, and, you know, vice versa, Burchelt, Valdez, you know, was talked about for a long time. Like you said, Oscar waited about 2 years for Burchelt for this fight to be made. Now that fight is essentially in the rearview mirror, who in your mind, maybe just, you know, as a fan, you know, I know you're a part of his team and everything, but maybe just as a fan, who would be the biggest blockbuster fight at 130 pounds for Oscar at this point?
God, that's a good question. You know, like I said, I haven't, you know, we're so focused on Burchelt, I haven't really even thought about that because we're just so locked in. But there's a lot of good fights. There's a lot of good names. God, I mean, there's a lot of good fighters from Tank. I think that's a big fight. I think there's obviously Shakur Stevenson, you know, once he gets a belt, will be a huge fight. Or Jamal Herring and the Frampton winner will be a great fight. That's a good question. You got me on the spot there, but there's a lot. I mean, Leo Santa Cruz, I know I like to see him get a win, but that would be a fight. I mean, we've been asking for that Leo Santa Cruz fight for a couple of years now. So I don't know how realistic that is anymore, but that would have been, you know, just a fun fight to watch, you know. I think, yeah, there's a lot of good names. There's a lot of good, you know, and Oscar's got a lot of opportunities. So I think that he definitely is, you know, more than willing to fight these guys. So hopefully soon.
You mentioned, real quick, Leo Santa Cruz. Obviously, him and Valdez, both Mexican, you know, they both go in there and they just go to work and stuff like that. I feel like those two, like, I was always surprised over the last, you know, few years that I know they're both on separate, you know, their own respective promotional company, Top Rank, PBC, Al Haymon, and all that.
Right.
But I always thought that those two, you guys would be able to find common ground and make that fight in some form or fashion, because the egos, that, you know, I wouldn't see them as a problem between somebody like Valdez and Santa Cruz. So, you know, was it just always, I know you just mentioned that you guys asked for that fight. Was it just always promotional politics, I'm assuming?
Yeah, 100%. It was more promotional. I know Leo Santa Cruz personally. He's a warrior. He will fight anybody. I know that. You know, I don't need to, you know, I'm not going to, you know, say he's scared or anything like that. I know that he's up to the fight. At the end of the day, it is the boxing politics that played a part into that not happening. And that's unfortunate because fans suffer. You know, you got two guys in the prime. They both are willing to more than fight. You know, and fans want to see it. So I don't know what's the excuse. Well, why doesn't it happen? That's it's just because, you know, they want to keep everything in house. I don't know, but right. I mean, that's what it makes it, you know, that's what it appears to be.
Right, right. Absolutely, absolutely. Well, you know, we don't want to take up too much of your time, Frankie. You know, we definitely appreciate you jumping on here on the last round. And once again, you know, congratulations on the big win for you and the rest of the team. You know, before we let you go ahead and, you know, obviously promote, I know you guys got social media handles and all that stuff, or anything you guys have upcoming. I know you guys got other fighters in your management stable. Joette Gonzalez is there and stuff like that. So, you know, if they have anything lined up in the upcoming future, obviously go ahead, the floor is yours and go ahead and plug it, man.
Yeah, absolutely. Thank you. You know, just, you know, we're social media. You can follow us on Twitter and Instagram, Espinoza Boxing. We got a great stable, young fighters are coming up. Joette Gonzalez, he's rated number 2 in the WBO. I would love to see him against Navarrete. I think that would be a great fight, or even the Lara who just beat Warrington.
Right.
I honestly feel that Joette can beat both of them. I think that's a great fight. Then we got Raul Curiel, Joselito Velasquez. We got a lot of good fighters that are coming up. Even Rene Bravo, he beat Carlos Banderas. Right. You know, yeah. So he's working with Carlos Barragan in the House of Boxing in San Diego right now, and that guy can punch. I mean, a lot of the guys that he's been sparring, you know, everyone says the same thing, man, this guy can punch. So he's a great guy to look out for. Obviously he's got to, you know, work on a few things here and there, but we got a lot of good, exciting fighters that you'll be hearing about in the very near future.
One final question that popped into my head before we let you go, Frankie, since you guys are, you know, a management company for the sport of boxing, has there been one fighter that, you know, became, I guess, some sort of a management free agent that you guys made an offer to and we're hoping to land, but just didn't work out, that, you know, you're just like, damn, I wish we got him?
Yeah. Yeah. There's quite a few, you know, there was years ago, my father, we almost had Ike Werte at one point. We actually brought him over. My dad brought him over, you know, from Africa, and for whatever reason, things didn't turn out. We were very close to signing, Andy Ruiz at one point.
Been good.
We were very close to signing the heavyweight, the other one, I'm sorry, I'm going blank right now, the heavyweight that fought
Areola.
We almost had Areola in the beginning, or so there's obviously a lot more. I would love to sign them all. But unfortunately, you know, that's boxing, and you know, that comes with the sports. Sometimes you sign guys, or you hope to sign guys. You know, at the end of the day, they're all, like I said, I've known Andy, I've known, or even Leo Santa Cruz. We were so close to signing. We're super close. And, you know, and things didn't turn out. But at the end of the day, you know, things happen for a reason. You can't look back. But you know, you wish all these guys nothing but success. You know, because at the end of the day, they all come from nothing. They all work their ass off to get where they're at. And, you know, it's still great to see them. Obviously, you would love to be a part of it. But like I said, you can't sign everybody, man, or else, you know, I would.
Right, absolutely. As long as you guys keep making attempts, man, you know, the more attempts,
absolutely.
Then, you know, the more they'll land eventually. So
absolutely.
But we are, once again, man, we appreciate it. Frankie Espinoza of the Espinoza Management Boxing Team. Who represents and is celebrating the biggest win of Oscar Valdez's career. He is now the 130-pound WBC champion after his knockout win against Miguel Burchell. You're welcome back anytime, Frankie. We appreciate it. That was sweet, man. That was sweet. I'm glad, like we mentioned at the beginning of the episode, I'm glad he got back to us, man, because I know sometimes we message people and they see the message late, or sometimes they just don't get back to us. So, you know, it's not like we haven't done episodes by ourselves, right, Mike?
Just a few by ourselves. Yeah.
Just a few, especially at the beginning. So, you know, big thanks to Frankie Espinoza Jr. for jumping on, and congratulations once again on his team's win. Oscar Valdez, new 130-pound WBC champion. Going back to this past Saturday, the 20th of February, from the Wembley Arena in London on DAZN, talking about your countryman, Mike, they got you again. Josh Kelly suffers a first loss of his career as he gets stopped in the sixth round by David Avanesyan. And this was for the EBU European welterweight title, another alphabet title. They're all over the place, especially over there. I mean, I didn't catch this live, but I did see the highlights. And I got, you know, I saw Twitter kind of going wild. They're like, oh, Josh Kelly. And then, you know, especially a lot of UK media talking about it. What was your initial reaction when you heard the news, or were you able to watch the fight live?
Yeah, I actually managed to watch it live on my cell phone. So hopefully my boss doesn't listen to this. I don't know. It's just one of those things. I think we said last week, the problem I have with Josh Kelly is he has all the talent in the world, but he has that Amir Khan syndrome where he seems to think he can stand and trade. That's not what he's good at. He needs to, you know, get into the pocket, you let a few go, get back out, you know, instead of trying to stand and trade, which is, you know, which obviously made Amir Khan slip up when, you know, in his losses to, like, you know, Garcia, Bradis Prescott. It's the same type of thing. I know they're talking about him moving up to 154. They keep saying that maybe the you know, getting down, you know, boiling down to 147 wasn't good for him. I just don't know whether he has the power at 154 because he's not a great puncher at 147. So I don't know how that's going to work. To me, I think it's more about just getting him to stick to a game plan, or he's just going to become one of those people that's known as an absolutely outstanding gym fighter, but he just can't do it under the lights on the night.
What doesn't Floyd Mayweather say something like that? Like, you know, they're the best fighters in the gym. I'm the best fighter under the lights or something. I think he said like something like that before. Well, what did you think about even before this matchup? Obviously, before the Josh Kelly suffered the defeat. What did you think about when this matchup was announced? Like, did you think it was too much of a step up against somebody like Avanesyan, who pretty much almost had more than triple the fights that Josh Kelly has?
Not necessarily, because if you look at the people that have those great pedigrees, you know, he had a great amateur pedigree. He's not up there with, you know, Vasyl Lomachenko type of, you know, 396 amateur fights, but he did have a good pedigree. So I think it was, you know, the way that he fights in the gym, you know, what everyone talks about him, it was maybe in hindsight, maybe a step up too quick, because, you know, I personally feel that he needs to put, you know, he needs to be able to stick to a game plan for the entire fight. Me and you were ringside when he fought, you know, kind of a Mexican journeyman in Phoenix. And me and you said the same thing, like, he's getting tagged far too much by a journeyman. Maybe because he knew that he could take the power from that guy and he just wanted to try and knock him out. But still, you need to put into practice stuff that you're going to use later in your career. And, you know, you're just getting tagged too much. He was lucky when he fought Ray Robinson on the Anthony Joshua undercard to get a draw in that fight. You know, he really should have lost that fight. He probably just got it because it was a matchroom card and he was, you know, the A side. So to me, I think he has all the tools. It's just getting disciplined that he sticks to a game plan of getting in and out, in and out. Go back to that amateur style that has worked so well for him.
Didn't you speak to Adam Booth or something? Because we saw them. You mentioned when we were in that fight. It was a Chavez Jacobs fight. There was a headliner in Phoenix, Arizona. After the fight, we went to a bar right there in downtown, and where we saw Josh Kelly, Adam Booth, and some other people from DAZN staff and other fighters and stuff like that. I feel like maybe I'm misremembering, but didn't you speak to Adam Booth or Josh Kelly and tell them like, hey man, like you were getting tagged, like, you know, what happened?
Yeah, I remember kind of saying that to Adam Booth, and you know, I think he was kind of said that was something that he didn't like about Josh, and that, you know, he has all the skills in the world, and I think he thought that, you know, obviously, you know, when the level of opponent increased, that we would see a better side of Josh, you know, just because he was fighting, you know, C or D level fighters, that, you know, he could go in there, kind of get in there, blow them out, kind of look for more of a KO, where, you know, when the level of opposition went up, that he would look even better, because, you know, more's on the line, you're more excited, you're more nervous. So it kind of sometimes obviously brings out that A level game, because, you know, you're kind of twitching, there's a good chance that you can lose. But, you know, for Josh, it just hasn't worked like that. You know, I know people were talking about the cut and, you know, saying that he felt weak because he'd lost so much blood. But honestly, the game plan was just all wrong. He started off well, and then it slowly but surely, like, he just kind of went back to the old, getting his feet were just stuck. He wasn't moving around enough. He wasn't, you know, getting in and out of the pocket. You know, Avanesyan just started going to work on him, kind of wore him down. And I don't know, maybe Avanesyan wore him down, or maybe just Joshua just went back to the old game plan of just trying to stand and trade, and it didn't work out. So he knew he needs to learn to stick to a disciplined game plan, or maybe go to someone else. Maybe him and Adam Booth just don't get on. But Adam Booth's a very good trainer so far. I thought that he did well. I thought it was a great decision to throw in the towel. I didn't really see anything more than an Avanesyan KO. After the fifth or sixth round, it just looked like Avanesyan kind of grew into the fight more.
You mentioned Adam Booth throwing in the towel. Obviously, he threw in the towel in the sixth round, which caused the TKO decision. Historically, you know, obviously, I guess being hardcore fans and assuming a lot of our listeners are very into the sport, there's been fights in the past over the years since boxing has been a sport where trainers have thrown in the towel, you know, kind of going back to the most recent publicized one, Deontay Wilder, Mark Breland throwing in the towel, where the fighter gets upset after, and then, you know, in the months or weeks following that matchup or that outcome, the relationship is severed, you know, because the fighter was upset and then the trainer was just trying to save the fighter and this and that. Do you think this is something that happens between Josh Kelly and Adam Booth, or do you think it's Josh Kelly has that much respect for Adam Booth that he knows it was the right decision and they're going to be able to move past something like that?
I think it really depends on the fighter. Like, it looked like from what Deontay Wilder said that he couldn't sit there and admit defeat to Tyson Fury. You know, he's, I don't know, mentally weak or something like that. That the fact that he looked for so many excuses apart from looking at himself and deciding that he was the second best fighter on that night. Whereas in this occasion, Josh Kelly has come out there and openly said in interviews, David Avanesyan was the better fighter on the night. So I don't think that, you know, any blame or there's going to be any war between Josh Kelly and Adam Booth, because, you know, Josh Kelly was big enough to admit defeat.
Right. Yeah. But I mean, we'll see. Like, did Eddie Hearn or anybody, Matchroom, did they mention anything about, you know, any rematch with Avanesyan, or is it just kind of, are they going to try to take Josh Kelly in a different round to kind of build him back up, get some wins, maybe two wins after, you know, after some lesser known opponents, and then kind of get him back into the mix? Was there any mention of stuff like that?
No mention of a rematch. I mean, the rumoring straight after the fight was a move actually up to 154, but, you know, me personally, I don't know how hard it is for him to make the weight, but I just don't see him being a big enough puncher at that weight. He was not a huge puncher at 147. So,
right.
You know, only time will tell. So we'll have to wait and see what happens. I like him as a fighter, a great guy. When we, you know, sat and had beers with him in Phoenix. So, you know, I thought he was an exciting fighter as well. He's good to watch. So is David Avanesyan, to be honest with you. Avanesyan's great to watch. You know, whoever he goes in with, it's always a great fight because he just stands and trades and he puts, you know, his life on the line in the fight. So he's great TV. So, you know, it's sad to really see a loser in the fight, to be honest with you.
Right. You know, I mean, I think that eventually he just like anybody, like you said, he's fought, this fight was at 147. He's been fighting at 147. They were talking about possibly moving up to 154. There's a lot of weight classes in the sport of boxing, especially as of right now, as of this moment, that have a lot of great talent. But especially 147 to 154, there's a lot of big names there. There's a lot of big money names. There's a lot of big talent. So, you know, eventually I think he would have ran into somebody, even if he beat Avanesyan this past Saturday, you know, and he kept winning and winning. Obviously it's great for his career. It's great for his mentality, but, am I wrong to say that eventually he would eventually find himself in the ring with somebody who's, you know, extremely accomplished in either the welterweight division or the junior middleweight division at 154 pounds?
Definitely on the recent performances. kind of repeating myself, but you know, for me personally, watching him, he needs to stick to a game plan. He needs to stop that Amir Khan of getting tagged and then suddenly changing it and saying, you know what, I'm just going to go to war with you, because he can't do it. He's not got that amazing chin. You know, in this fight, he didn't get knocked out. He got knocked down several times, got up every time. You know, so he's a warrior in that instance.
What do you think? But for
his health,
right? So what do you think the difference between somebody like him, like Josh Kelly, who you said, like, you know, sometimes he'll just get in there and then he'll just kind of abandon the game plan and he'll just kind of go to war with the other fighter and then just hopes to come out on the other side as the victor. Oscar Valdez has been criticized of stuff like that in the past. You know, excluding this last fight against Burchell, Valdez, you know, that's why a lot of people say this guy has heart. This guy has heart. He just comes back because he's gotten knocked down. He engages. I think he's been criticized. I don't know if you want to call it criticized, but people have observed that, how he just kind of, he goes to war with his opponent. Even when the experience he has outweighs his opponent and you know, the talent he has outweighs his opponent in that respect. What do you think the difference between somebody like Valdez, who's went through episodes like that, engaging with the other fighter in terms of a war, and Josh Kelly, what's the comparison there?
Just that it suits Valdez's style more. Valdez is heavy-handed, good chin. You know, obviously takes shots, sometimes gets, you know, knocked down, but he's just a bigger, buffer, more solid fighter that he can take it. Josh Kelly's more, you know, thin, more of your amateur style still, you know, in, out type of fighter, whereas Valdez is just, you know, kind of got that stereotypical, I'm afraid, you know, Mexican style, stands in the pocket, or typically did, not in this fight, to be honest with you. When he fought Belchelli, he didn't. Obviously, you know, looks like Valdez can, you know, stick to the game plan more. A great example is, you know, I think this fight, you know, ever since, you know, when he used to fight before people like Scott Quigg and, you know, the start of the fight against Adam Lopez, I thought he was more, would sit in your pocket a little bit more. And then, you know, after he got dropped by Lopez, he kind of switched to his old school style, which kind of worked for him because he started teeing off on Lopez. But, you know, the transition into this fight, I think he could definitely see what Eddie Reynoso's worked on, you know, the, you know, a lot more movement, a lot more head movement. You know, he seemed lighter on his feet. And maybe that's just a fact of the camp that he's gone to, and, you know, knowing that, you know, Reynoso trains Canelo and how good Canelo is, maybe that's, you know, something he looks at and realizes, like, you know, hey, I need to listen to this guy, and this guy's a boxing guru. Look what he's done to Canelo. So, you know, in hindsight, maybe Josh Kelly losing this fight, he hopefully is an awakening for him to realize that, you know, I need to stick to the game plan that Adam Booth sets, because if not, I'm not going to have a career. You know, he may be able to get over this loss, but if it happens again, where does he go from here?
Right. I think that's the big question. So we'll see how he comes out on the other side. You know, sometimes fighters come back from a loss even stronger and they find second wind and they keep going. And sometimes it pushes them down even further. So we'll see how he responds as time goes by. Also on that card, Gabriel Galaz Valenzuela gets the majority decision win in 10 rounds over Robbie Davis Jr. for the vacant IBF Intercontinental Super Lightweight title. Man, that's a mouthful. What the hell is that, Mike? What did you think about this fight?
I didn't really see the opposite coming. You know, you kind of did worry because of the, you know, Lara beating Warrington. He's obviously, I don't know whether it's because he's teamed up with Canelo and, you know, he's started using a lot of, you know, Canelo's fighters or, you know, the fighters out of Mexico because of that. You know, we're seeing a lot more guys come over to the UK instead of using the usual Eastern European type of fighters that they used to just use as cannon fodder. You know, but these, you know, South American fighters are coming over and they're knocking out all the English guys. So I don't know whether you'd call that good matchmaking because we're getting shocks, or is that bad matchmaking because the matchroom fighters are losing? But either way, good fight. I thought Robbie Davis Jr. was so strange that he decided to come out in southpaw. That straight right down the pipe was absolutely killing him. Him and, you know, Dominic Ingles got into a a bit of an argument about it. Dominic Ingle wouldn't, for some reason, let him, you know, kind of swap and go back to orthodox stance, which is so strange. And, you know, it cost him the fight, in my opinion. I don't really know what... You know, Robbie Davis Jr. has only really just gone to Dominic Ingle for the last couple of fights. You know, he kind of was more of a switch hitter. That gym is known to be a switch hitting gym. So the reason that he stuck to Southpaw is just baffling. And I wonder if those guys are going to work together, because in my opinion, and I think a lot of people kind of agree, it really, really cost him the fight because it just didn't work. And he stuck to the plan and maybe thought they were going to get it because of they were the A-side. And, you know, luckily, you know, for Valenzuela, maybe the fact that we had those outlandish cards last week, this week they seem to be a lot better. And, you know, we saw the shock. They got the majority decision. Should have really probably been wider than that, in my opinion.
Also on the card, the Albanian Florian Marcoop gets the eighth round TKO over Rylan Charlton. I hope I said that right. Even though Marcoop was actually down in the sixth round, Charlton's corner did throw in the towel. How surprising was that to you, especially after seeing Marcoop being knocked down?
You know, Marcoop's one of those fighters, I think he's good for TV. You can see that he came from an MMA background because he kind of throws his, you know, combinations from like odd angles at times. He's kind of a little bit unorthodox in his style, but great to watch because he just stands and fights, stands and trades. But he obviously, I think he's going to have a very limited ceiling. You could kind of tell that going in that Marcoop was going to be too big, too strong, because Rylan Charlton is really more of a natural 140 fighter. So they kind of dragged him up to 147 as cannon fodder because, you know, Charlton obviously beaten Joseph Laws at a previous Matchroom event. And then, you know, those two were kind of going back and forth on social media. So you could kind of see that it really should be, you know, Marcoop should be too big, too strong, and really just overpowering, which he did in the end. And I thought the corner did great work again, you know, throwing in the towel and, you know, saving, you know, Rylan Charlton for another day. And it was kind of good from Eddie Hearn and the team to say that, you know, they'll use him again. He's just gives his all, you know, whilst he's in there. So, you know, for the limited skills that he has, it's good to see that Matchroom will, you know, drag him out again and use him again, because he's put on some good shows over the last year.
From the Mohegan Sun Casino, also this past Saturday in Connecticut on Showtime. That's right. About Billions. He's back. Mike Adrian Broner gets a 12-round unanimous decision win over Giovanni Santiago. Obviously, we had Gerald Tucker on last week on the last round, who's a part of AB's team as an assistant coach, assistant trainer. He wears many hats. I think he admitted that he wears many hats for that team. If any of our listeners listened to that show last week, or if you haven't, there was a question where we did ask him how the weight cut was going, just because there's obviously been issues before in the past with Broner. He chose not to answer it. I think we knew why. I think because he knew there was probably a concern, because obviously the day before, right? Was it the day before? The day of, the weight was changed from 140 to 147. Am I right in that, right?
Day before, I think.
Right. So, you know, well, when you heard that, when you heard the weight change, especially after we interviewed somebody from his team, what did you think? What was your reaction?
Just Broner being Broner. And it wasn't really surprising. It was kind of surprising that, you know, if you were going to bring a fighter down from, you know, not really fighting for so many years and then obviously coming in massively overweight, it probably would be easier if your aim was to get them to, you know, 140 or 135 eventually, you know, to slowly do it, go to 147, then maybe to 140 and then, you know, 135 or 140, whatever they decide to finish up on. But looking at him on the scales and looking at him on fight night, not much more to come off him. You know, I didn't think, you know, to get into 140, that's another 7 pounds. He'd looked pretty ripped anyway. So to get him off another 7 pounds off that, or to get another 12 pounds to get him down to 135 at the age of 31 or whatever he is in the life he's lived, good luck.
Do you think Broner gets another marquee matchup after this?
Yeah, short time. I mean, he did decent-ish numbers on Showtime. But the fact is how many times are we all going to be fooled by him? You know, 12 rounds of boxing through 338 punches. That was it. After, you know, I asked him, I said, like, that he's had some complaints about his last few fights and Broner not throwing. And Gerald Tucker, you know, said that, you know, we've been working on it. We've been working, you know, throwing a lot of combinations, blah, blah, blah. So
I just feel like Broner really needs a disciplined trainer. He needs somebody to really tell him what to do, to lay down the law. Because I think Broner is such a powerful personality at this point. Not at this point. He's been at this for quite a few years now. That he's able to maneuver and dominate whatever he likes and doesn't like in his training camps. So I'm not saying he's not disciplined. Obviously, he's gotten to this level, which is, you know, great. You know, he's obviously worked hard. But I think that I think that he needs somebody. Like, I mean, for example, like, you know, I'm not saying it's going to happen, but maybe like an Abel Sanchez. We've spoken to Abel Sanchez in the past, not on this show, but just in, you know, general interviews, and we've heard interviews and stuff. Somebody like an Abel Sanchez doesn't take shit from anybody. You know, I think he's mentioned in interviews before where he's had, you know, people up in his camp and they don't survive because he tells them like, oh yeah, you can't do this. This is what I require. I'm your nutrition coach. I'm also your trainer. I mean, wouldn't you think he needs somebody like that if he really wants to find that second wind and really kind of become a contender again?
We all enable it. That's the problem.
No, that's true. But I mean,
he comes in overweight. They change the weight. He's coming overweight purposely before, just pays the fine. This fight goes ahead. Showtime keep giving him big paydays. We all enable him, you know. Unfortunately, like, we still tune in to watch him because he's, you know, recently his fights haven't been good, but the build-up is, the interviews afterwards always are. You know, he's a character on social media. We all kind of still tune in, and, you know, it just depends, like, how many times now. That's his last, what, three or four fights that he's hardly throwing any punches. But we all still tune in, so... To him, sometimes you look at it, he's like, well, why should I change? Like,
right.
Still get paid. You know, you guys still tune in.
Yeah, it's true. I mean, you know, it is what it is. It is what it is. But, you know, our listeners shouldn't be surprised if he gets another marquee name after this, you know, especially because obviously, like you said, he did a decent ratings on Showtime. You know, people tune in to watch the guy.
Well, it was funny that Gerald Tucker mentioned Jesse Vargas. That was out of the blue. But Jesse Vargas isn't a big puncher. So it's kind of like a soft little target for him.
I mean, they did fight to a draw, you know? So, like, I wouldn't mind that, honestly. I wouldn't mind seeing that again, you know, because I feel like they're kind of on similar, you know, competitive levels at the moment.
Kind of in limbo.
And that, too. Yeah. Co-main event for this card, Otto Wallin. How do you say it?
Yeah.
Otto Wallin. Gets a unanimous decision win. The only loss he's ever had was to Tyson Fury in Las Vegas, but he gets the unanimous decision win over Dominic Brazil. Brazil, this is now the second loss in a row for him. The first loss being the crazy knockout to the straight right hand bazooka from Deontay Wilder. What'd you think about this heavyweight matchup?
One-sided, really. Would have been better to see, you know, Otto Wallin really get him out of there. But that, you know, Tyson Fury win is kind of looking better and better now, because obviously at the time, no one really knew who Otto Wallin is, but, you know, he goes in there, kind of really pasted, you know, Dominic Brazil. It was one-sided, in my opinion. You know, onto, you know, bigger and better things. You know, I would have actually probably have Otto Wallin in there in my top, maybe top 10 of the heavyweights out there at the time. He's pretty skillful. He knows what he's doing in there. You know, he's got a good coach with, you know, Joey Gamache over in New York. So he's, you know, slowly but surely kind of making a little name for himself, getting some, you know, good wins. So, you know, he could be, you know, up and, in and around there. You could see him in some bigger fights, you know, later down the line. Well,
right.
not if Tyson Fury unifies the whole division, I guess, but, you know, in there with some names.
Yeah, I think Otto Wallin or Wallin, Wallin, Wallin. How do you pronounce it?
I mean, most people say Wallin, so I'm guessing that's
the correct. That's what I think, right? I think that's the proper way. I hope it is. I apologize. But is he Swedish?
Swedish. Yeah.
I apologize to our Swedish listeners if that's they're probably yelling at us through their speakers. So it's Mike's fault. He told me how to pronounce it. Otto Wallin. I think, like you mentioned, going back to the Tyson Fury fight. I think that gave, even though he lost, that gave him a big confidence booster. Mm-hmm. I think it really made him a better fighter. I think this past Saturday, how he pretty much dominated the fight against somebody like Brazil, it showed him that. It showed that. And I don't necessarily would say I disagree that he belongs in the top 10. I think he might. I think I agree with that. Mm-hmm. I think I agree with that. So, you know, he definitely has some steam. And we'll see how he goes. So it's going to be exciting to see that. Also on the card, Robert Easter Jr. gets the 12-round unanimous decision win over Ryan Blue Chip Martin. I thought this was we talked about this before last week's episode, that this was a pretty decent matchup. But it looks like Easter Jr. was just a little bit more experienced, and really dominated the fight. Am I wrong?
I honestly think Ryan Martin's a hype job. When he got in there and he fought Josh Taylor absolutely battered him. And when he said, I did wonder, I was like, maybe Josh Taylor's just that good. And then I saw him in this. I don't know if Ryan Martin's ever seen a jab. He couldn't even work past Easter's jab. But I looked completely confused.
Right.
I mean, I know that he was off for a long time. It's funny how they kind of swept. He tested positive after facing Josh Taylor and got a huge ban, like 2 or 3 years. And then he just disappeared and then came back and no one talks about it.
Right. Well, you act like that's not the first time that's happened in boxing.
It's kind of odd, you know, that it's just no one brings it up ever. It's just,
yeah, you're right. But like, you act like that's never happened in boxing before. Like, it happens.
No, if he was a bigger name, I'm sure it would be people would bring it up a lot more.
Jarrell Miller will pop up again. And he's been given like 3 chances and he messed up every time. Somebody will definitely give him a chance again.
So. Yeah, because they'll have him as like the villain.
Yeah. So, you know, case in point. Going back to the bubble at the MGM Grand Garden Arena in Las Vegas, one more fight to talk about. Gabriel Flores Jr., the self-anointed Stockton's King, Stockton, a city in Northern California, Stockton, California, remains undefeated and gets a 6-round TKO over the veteran Jason Velez. Flores Jr. also fights at 130 pounds. That's something we could have asked Frankie Espinoza Jr. about. You know, at 20 wins now, did he earn a right to get one of those big names at 130 pounds? Maybe not a world champion, but maybe like, I mean, maybe like a Jojo Diaz who just lost his title on the scale or something like that. Maybe an Andrew Cancio, former world champion.
I mean, he said he wants the winner of, obviously, Herring and Frampton, which, you know, as we stated before, you know, they're all under the top rank banner, which should be kind of easier to make. Is he ready? He's skillful, good fighter. I think he's slowly kind of getting his man strength. I still think he needs a little bit longer because he doesn't have much pop. He's 20 and 0, only 7 KOs. And obviously he's fought a lot of, journeymen, which, if he had that big man strength, if he had that pop, if it ever develops, not everyone has it. You'd have thought he would have got more people out of there. His last few fights, he really has stepped it up. Jason Velez really isn't a bad opponent. He's been in there with a lot of, well-known names over the time.
He was in there with Valdez.
He's more gatekeeper than, journeyman, in my opinion.
Yeah.
But I don't know if he's up there. I don't know if he's up there and ready enough for a Jamal Herring or a Cal Frampton yet.
I think like a Cancio, an Andrew Cancio.
I just worry that the fact that he has no pop, that, when he gets in there with somebody.
And he gets hit with power.
Yeah. And like, they feel his lack of power, that they'll just walk him down.
Yeah, I agree. Yeah, I agree with that.
But I have been wrong before.
I don't think you're wrong here, Mike. I don't. So it's up to him to prove us wrong. But 20-0, he's winning. He might not have the pop, but, if he's able to get around that, even as he steps up his game and fights more powerful guys, bigger guys, and he's still able to pull it out, you know, it could happen. It could happen. As of right now, it's working. It's working. So it might not be working exactly how people want it to work, but it is working. Moving on, fight previews. This upcoming Saturday, the 27th of February, fighting for the for his first time of 2021 in a scheduled, I wouldn't say scheduled, but in a rumored first of three times. So February, May, September.
There's rumor of fall now. There's rumor of New Year's Eve against Murata.
Maybe in Japan. Could be huge. Could be huge. Saul Canelo Alvarez returns after his last fight against Callum Smith as he goes up against his mandatory challenger for the... This is for the... Yildirim is a mandatory challenger for which belt?
The WBC somehow.
It is, right?
Yep.
Avni Yildirim, who is trained by Joel Diaz, who you interviewed at his actual gym in the Coachella Valley out here last month, or January, I believe. Yeah, last month. Yildirim is obviously challenging Alvarez for the WBC and WBA super middleweight titles. So this is contested at 168 pounds. I think Yildirim is a decent opponent, you know, from an overall perspective, but like not in terms of Canelo. You didn't let me finish. So I think a lot of people are looking past him. They're talking about Billy Joe Saunders in May, which I can understand, you know, if you just want to look at it from a competitive standpoint, you know, Canelo having the experience he does and being the pound for pound best in the world from the fighters he's faced the last several fights, especially. Is there any way you can see Yildirim get an upset here?
No, he shouldn't even be in the fight. He shouldn't be. How is he the mandatory? He's lost what? Two of his last three fights, and his last win was a guy against somebody with like a 3-31 record. Like, how is he even allowed to fight somebody who's, when he's a professional with a record of 21-2, how is he allowed to fight somebody with a record of 3-31 just to get back in the winning column? Ridiculous.
You don't think it's just the power of Canelo?
Canelo picked him because it's a sparring partner. He's just giving him a payday. That's what it is.
Oh, yeah, that's true. They've sparred before. Yeah. You also got to look at it this way. For everybody that doesn't remember, obviously Canelo and the WBC, even though they, in front of the camera, sometimes they might look like they're friends. I don't think Canelo really cares for them. They have obviously had their issues in the past. Remember when they were trying to order the fight with Triple G, the first fight. And Canelo dropped the belt and said, like, no organization is going to tell me what to do. He was just like, and he dropped the belt. And they had, like, their feud back and forth. And the WBC was trying to get back in with him and you know, trying to get a cut of that purse again, you know.
Now he tells them what to do.
So now he tells them what to do. And I think this is what's happening here. Yep. I think he told the WBC, you know, allegedly, let's throw that out there because we don't want to get sued, Mike. Allegedly, that, you know, he's like, hey, I'm gonna fight this guy, make it for your title, order it. I think that's what happened.
Yeah. If you go back, they might have deleted him now, but if you go back, there's pictures of him like arm in arm with him after sparring and stuff like that.
Right.
So he's probably just buddies with him and like got him a payday. And then,
probably.
We'll go on to it in a minute, but Durrell, how is his fight with that journeyman, a WBC eliminator? Durrell's lost his last fight, his last like one or two fights, and he hasn't fought for like 2 years. But he's a WBC eliminator out of the blue. The WBC used to do some, well, they all do some wacky stuff, but WBC used to be probably the top. They were like the best belt, that green belt, because everyone knows it from Muhammad Ali and, you know.
Well, it's the oldest sanctioning body, so it has.
Yeah, and it used to be like kind of like the pinnacle. And now I just see some of the stuff that they do, and it's just insane. I mean, I just don't get how Avni Yildirim or Durrell can be mandatories or eliminators when they've recently lost. I don't get it.
Mike, the fact that you're still so surprised about sanctioning bodies doing stuff like this means you're not a true boxing fan.
It just blows my mind. Like, surely there's somebody like in second or third place who actually is deserving. They've had like five or six
wins
against recognized opponents.
Canelo runs the show. He runs the show.
Yeah,
and And the WBC, like any other sanctioning body, wants a cut. You know, obviously they have all their different ways of how they go about business. Yeah. We've had the president of the IBO in here who does computerized rankings. And I think they're the only ones who do computerized rankings and stuff. And everybody else kind of just, you know, based on like a panel or a board, or they vote on it, or they just do it on their own, or
whoever have you. Whoever pays the most.
Right. Exactly. You know, well, how many people have we told us off the record, you know, without naming names? And this is multiple people in the boxing business, like people who know their stuff, who would say, who, if we reveal the names on air right now, people are like, holy shit. How many people have told us off the record? Like, oh yeah. Yeah. Those rankings don't matter. We just make a call and we get moved up.
Yeah.
It's been more than one person who's told us that, and it's people with weight in the game. So, you know, take that for what you will, but, you know, I think it's good that Canelo is at least trying to fight minimum three times this year. You know, I think this ends within six rounds, maybe seven.
Yeah. If you can get good odds of, like KO in the first six rounds or something like that, then jump on it, bet your house on it or something like that. And that's the only reason I would see that not happening would be if Canelo just took his foot off the gas and, you know, somehow decided to let his sparring partner, you know, like let off and just do 12 easy rounds, get some rounds in the bank. But
you never know. He might.
Seeing what Canelo's like, you know, just the fact that he's had so many fights and he's stood at that side of his, stood at the top of his game, just shows really his dedication and, you know, his will to win. So if it was me, I would put my money on, yeah, a fairly early stoppage.
Right. Yeah. And I mean, he's working, and another thing in regards to this story, he's also working with Eddie Hearn again, Matchroom, which I think pretty much solidifies that he's going to keep working with Eddie Hearn on a fight by fight basis and working with DAZN as the broadcasting platform. So
what does Eddie Hearn know about boxing in the USA?
Right. Guy. I mean, he has the two biggest stars in the boxing world today now.
Yeah,
he does. He got them. He has both of them. You know, like, it. You know, he worked out. He came into the U.S. to take over in a sense, or try to make a mark, and he has.
Yeah, he's got Triple G. Probably just really missing Tyson Fury, and he would have.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, Tyson Fury would be the only other, you know, big publicity name that he doesn't have. But he has all the rest. Technically, I mean, even though if like with Canelo, it's fight by fight basis and stuff like that. Well, this is now the second fight that Canelo and Eddie Hearn have partnered up together. So obviously, if Canelo returned back with him and is working with him again, obviously Canelo likes what he saw the first time. So
he's clever as well, because if you look at the social media, like all the stuff that he does, like, you know, Canelo sent him those crazy panda pajamas, and he's going to wear them for the weigh-in. He bought, you know, Canelo went to his room this week for fight week, and he bought in that huge, like a putting green in his room. He's very clever. You know, he rolls the red carpet out. If you look at his last ring entrance, that mashup and all the mariachi band.
That's
and
smart,
stuff like
man.
That.
That's smart.
Yeah, he knows. He knows what to do. Get that red carpet out to keep him, because he's the biggest cash cow in boxing.
Yeah, he's the star, man. And you got to make them feel the stars. He works hard. He worked hard to get where he's at. He does it with Anthony Joshua at Wembley Stadium and stuff like that. All these fireworks, and comes out and his name, his initials in the back lit on fire. Like, that's what he has to do to these guys. Like, make them feel like superstars. Like, they're not human, you know? So, you know, I would love to be a fly on the wall on a Golden Boy meeting, you know, or maybe when they're watching the fight, when they're watching these Canelo fights now. But yeah, you know, it's definitely an interesting situation here. Like I said, within six rounds, I think it's over. And then BJ Saunders in May. And then, you know, kind of go from there. But we'll see. But the fact that Canelo is at least fighting so early, within essentially 3 months that he fought last, it's good for the sport. You know, it gets eyeballs to watch, regardless if there's some funny business going on with the WBC and Omni Yildirim being picked as the mandatory challenger here. So it is what it is. Also on the card is a co-main event. Julio Cesar Martinez, 17-1, goes up against McWilliams Arroyo for the WBC Flyweight World Championship. I like Julio Cesar Martinez. The first time we really got a glimpse of him, like in person, was in Phoenix, Arizona for the Chavez Jacobs fight. I was very excited. It was a very exciting time. Eddie Hearn was obviously on the last round here the following morning in the Fighter Hotel and talked highly of Julio Cesar Martinez. What do you think about this matchup? I know McQuillan's Arroyo has a couple of decent names on his resume.
Yeah, I mean, Arroyo's was kind of hit the scene running at the time. You know, I think a lot of people thought he was actually going to pick up a flyweight title back in the day. Had a couple of slip-ups along the line against some, Thai fighters. But Julio Cesar Martinez is just great. You know, goes in there, flat-footed, power puncher, just loves the scrap. You know, just goes in there and he's just great TV. Obviously, he beat Christopher Rosales in December 2019. He's had two defenses since. For the UK fans, you'll remember he beat Jay Harris. When was that? Last year, right? During the pandemic.
So, yeah.
No, great TV, great fight, great co-main. I expect, Martinez to win, and he's another Eddie Reynoso fighter.
Eddie Reynoso is taking over the game, man. Taking over the game in a few short years. Also this weekend from the Shrine Exposition Center here in Los Angeles, Anthony Doral, just like you mentioned earlier, 33-2-1, goes up against Kyron Davis. This is a WBC eliminator matchup. What do you think about this fight?
Completely pointless. I don't understand how they're having this as a main event. PBC cards have obviously just dropped off when they've got this as a main event. Doral is not fought for 2 years. His last fight was against David Benavidez. I think a lot of people thought he'd retired. And then the WBC suddenly come out with this is a WBC eliminator. The winner faces Canelo. So I'm just lost. I mean, Kayron Davis is pretty much just a journeyman. If you look at the people he's fought, they fought like records of like 3-6. The dude's like ranked, I checked before this was announced, because I managed to find like some old rankings. He was like 94th.
That's ridiculous.
So how on earth is this even in a WBC eliminator? I don't know what's going on. I don't know why Doral keeps getting chances with the WBC. He must have pictures of Mauricio Sulaiman in some compromising positions or something. I don't understand why and how he's getting these chances.
Mike, I repeat what I told you a few minutes ago. The fact that you're still surprised about stuff like this in this game means you're not a real fan.
It must be
surprising.
It's,
we know this happens. Like, it is what it is. It's sad to say that we have to just kind of look past it, but it's not changing. It's been like this for years. It's gonna keep happening.
I might turn pro.
We're in the wrong business. We should have
Christopher Lovejoy and just got a TJ and
we should have
like 20 like taxi drivers, and then I'll just get a shot at something and cash out.
What was that shirt? Did you see that shirt? You mentioned Christopher Lovejoy, promoted by Don King, all that whole ordeal that was happening. What was that? I saw a shirt not long after he was supposed to fight Dave Allen and it fell through. There was a shirt on Twitter that was circulating. It was a Christopher Lovejoy shirt. Do you remember what it said? What exactly did it say?
One shot. One shot Lovejoy. I was just like,
it was Christopher One Shot Lovejoy. Man, I've never laughed so hard in my life. I almost bought that shirt. I almost did, just for the hell of it.
He fights this weekend.
In
TJ again, but there's no opponent listed because I was going to put it on the preview
list.
There's no opponent listed yet because it'll probably just be someone random.
Well, there you go. And finishing up the show here from the Spark Arena in Auckland, New Zealand, Joseph Parker returns to the ring as he goes up against Junior Fa, the undefeated Junior Fa, 19-0. I guess initially, and correct me if I'm wrong, DAZN was not going to carry this fight. They weren't going to broadcast it, but I saw they had tweeted something within the last couple of days that's saying, they listened to people's, opinions and reactions and requests, and they're going to show this fight. What do you think about this matchup?
On paper, it really should be a win for Joseph Parker. Joseph Parker's ex-WBO heavyweight title holder, obviously been in there with, some good names. Obviously, Anthony Joshua also been in there with, Dillian White and took, White 12 rounds. Junior Fa, obviously just really more of just a big guy who's fought a lot of club fighters later down the line. I know these two have fought in the also in the amateurs. Faz kind of untested, but on the eye test, you know, it's really, you know, you have to back Joseph Parker. But he also, you know, had a couple of fights over the last year or two, probably maybe even 3 years now since we've had COVID, where he came in looking a little bit heavy against some lesser opponents, like he hadn't trained too much. So, you know, hopefully during these COVID times with him making all those funny videos that he was posting all over Twitter, hopefully he comes in, you know, refreshed and, you know, hasn't taken Junior Farr, you know, too lightly because, you know, it's a big, you know, domestic fight. So I'm sure Junior Farr wants to get in there. You know, he's fighting by far the biggest name he has. And it's also for the, you know, the bragging rights around New Zealand. So, you know, but all my money would go on, you know, Joseph Parker. And it's also good to see friend of the show, Andy Clark, will be calling it. So I'd like to hope that they start to use Andy a little bit more often because not only, you know, because he's been on the show several times, I like the way he calls fights. He's just, you know, straight down the middle. My eyes don't lie to me, so I don't need him to try to tell me, you know, stuff that's not happening. So, yeah, good to see that he's got the card and hopefully DAZN use him on a regular basis.
How much did Andy PayPal you to say that?
Do you want it in dollars or in pounds?
You tell me.
Not enough.
I'll find out. I'll figure it out.
It'll be more if he gets a permanent gig.
You never know. You never know. But once again, as we finish up here, guys, we appreciate you guys listening. Our big thanks to Frank Espinoza Jr. And congratulations again to him and his team on the Oscar Valdez's win and the new world title, WBC 130-pound world title they now have in their grasp. 130-pound landscape is becoming more and more exciting. But before we sign off here, Mike, go ahead once again. Our traditional send-off where our fans and listeners can follow us and find us.
And we're at The Last Round 12 on Instagram and Twitter. And obviously next week, joiners will be reviewing all the fights that we just spoke about. And also, it's kind of a quiet week, but I think we have the preview of Clarissa Shields and Maria Decor, which actually is a pay-per-view event. So that'll be interesting to see the amount of people that tune in for that. According to Clarissa Shields, she's the most popular fighter in God's green earth. So.
Maybe. We'll see. We'll see how it turns out after next week. So for once again, for my co-host Michael Shepherd, I'm Danny Z. And final shout out to Christopher, One Shot Lovejoy. This is The Last Round.
Thanks for supporting and listening to the show. Follow us at The Last Round 12 on social media. Rate, review, and subscribe. This is The Last Round Podcast.